This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 176. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome to the show, Gareth, Berners. I think this is my favourite part of my week. I've got a pretty good job, but I think this is the highlight of a job with many highlights. Just getting to talk about cricket for half an hour.
Absolutely, mate. It doesn't get any better than this, does it?
No, it's great fun, and hopefully along the way people learn something, because I always learn a few things, especially Berners' tail enders that we get at the end of the show.
I mean, if you can't learn from Berners, who can you? That's what I've always said.
So, Berners, big week?
Very big week. Recovering from my Millfield jaunt last week, and Ealing, unfortunately, we've succumbed to non-championship rivals this year. We lost again to Richmond on Saturday, so it's all over. Enjoyed a bit of the test match on Sunday, watching a very energetic South African side gain the number one status, so that was all good. And we're just putting together the final touches of our Pitch Vision One system, which is going to be going live in India very shortly, so it's all very exciting.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We're not talking about that yet, are we?
Not really, no, but we can mention it.
we'll mention it in passing. We'll whet people's appetites, and we'll talk a little bit more about it when it launches properly shortly.
Well, I tell you what I've been doing. Not that that wasn't interesting, lads, obviously. I've been coaching in Finland over the weekend and in Helsinki, helping the Finnish national team prepare for their European 2020 competition that's in the first part of September. And they've done a magnificent job over there. They've got hold of an area of land which was an old potato field, and they've converted it into a cricket ground, got an AstroTurf wicket in there, fantastic outfield, sights, greens, nets all around the ground to stop balls from hitting the local houses. They've got a nursery ground planned, a pavilion ground planned, and it was an absolutely awesome experience to get over there and work with some people that wanted to push on so much. The game is travelling well.
Yeah, so good luck to Finland. I've been desperately trying to think of a pun to do with Finland and Finnish and something to do with cricket, but I'm coming up with nothing. So let's just say good luck to them and move on. We don't normally do this. We don't do this very often. But I thought this week we'd talk about an article which appears on Pitch Vision Academy directly. It was by someone who occasionally contributes to the site, Tom Matcham, who has a few interesting theories on fast bowling. And he thinks that there should be a lot more 100 mile an hour or 160 kilometre an hour fast bowlers than there are. And he puts it down to the training methods that are used. And then he sort of cites some examples from the Olympics, weightlifting and javelin throwing as examples of ways that methods that can be used in fast bowling to improve. I don't want to paraphrase too much. I do urge you to go and have a look at the article, which is called How to Bowl at 161 Kilometres an Hour. I'll link to it in the show notes. But I wanted to get some views from you, Gareth. You've seen the article?
I have, yes. I mean, it's thought-provoking. And there's some really good concepts in it. I think the difference ultimately between Olympic sport and cricket is purely about the competition phases of their program. So, for example, somebody can only run at peak performance once every 4 years and win two Olympic golds. So that they only have to actually put their 161 mile an hour delivery together once, in the space of 4 years. Whereas in cricket, that doesn't work because we've got multi formats. And ultimately, anybody who can bowl around 150 plus is in demand, and in demand from various people around the world that want them to play in their teams, especially now 2020 is around, and there's so many opportunities for people to sort of freelance themselves and do that. And the competition, it's a competition program. You're always playing, which is the main reason and main difference between now and the 1980s when the West Indies were playing, where you had huge gaps in your program of 6 months in some occasions, where people were able to do the types of training that that Tom alludes to in his article. Whereas nowadays it's very, very difficult to do that because there just aren't the competition gaps. So that's where the article breaks down for me, is just the lack of space in the diary of people who can bowl at that sort of pace. And that's the main reason why paces have dropped. The training techniques he's absolutely spot on with, but in order to do those types of training techniques, you need to have a huge space in your diary in order to get it in. You know, for example, 4,000 lifts a month, you know, using the Olympic bar lifts is absolutely fantastic. But when you're playing 22 days out of 30, you know, you're not going to be able to get those in. Equally bowling 15 overs, two lots of 15 overs a day at 70%, the competition program gets in the way of that. And what you're seeing with Patrick Cummins, for example, is somebody who bowls at a good pace. Everybody wants him. Then he breaks down because you can't maintain your pace. It'll be like Usain Bolt running sub 9.5 100 metres 48 times a year. You know, the body just literally can't do that. It's an optimal performance, 160 kilometres an hour, and you just can't do that over and over and over again.
If you're a younger player and perhaps you have a competitive season and an off season which is more pronounced, then you can do a little bit more of this, but obviously if you're 14, you're not going to be a 100-mile-an-hour bowler or 160-kilometre-an-hour bowler, but you can do more of this if you have a more pronounced off-season.
Yeah, you can do, but then you get into your competitive season and all of a sudden you'll end up playing heaps and heaps and heaps. So that's a real challenge, is you'll only be able to really develop your pace over the course of an off season. The other thing as well in terms of repetitions is the growth spurt, is, you know, peak height velocity comes in, and whether you're doing your repetitions at 70% or 100%, it's probably going to be too much for you during that phase to do that volume of work that Tom alludes to. So I mean, that's the other thing that the article doesn't directly, and I'm sure Tom's got some great views on how to deal with people growing up and going through their maturation, but that's one of the other areas of the article that I'd like to know more about his thoughts on, is how you manage a young bowler within these things, because sometimes, you know, lifting Olympic weights when people are still growing is what you don't want to see happening. So and also you don't want those volumes going to bowlers whilst they're going through that peak height velocity either. So I think it's a really interesting article, and in an optimum world where we had four tournaments a year of one day, it would work fantastically well.
It's quite interesting how the bowlers vary their pace series to series, don't it? Because you see quite often that you get one highlight performance from a player and you think, blimey, does he really bowl that fast? I.e. broad, also, you know, show of Akhtar to a certain extent, where he's flown in, and even batsmen, commentators, fans alike who are in that ballpark suggest, you know, that was a very quick spell of bowling, yet maybe 3-4 months down the line, they're almost a totally different player, you know, different characteristics with their whole bowling due to whatever it is, fatigue or the conditions. So I guess that's something that's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, and it is fatigue a lot of the time, mate, because, you know, the nature of the game is as it is. And you play a championship match and you're bowling huge volume of overs, and it's very interesting. You know, when we see the speed guns, and I know they're not massively accurate, but they give you an indicator of, even the likes of Dale Steyn and Mornay Morkel, as threatening bowlers as they are, have been, you know, letting go of it at about 81, 82 in this present series, over a pretty tough three-match series. It will be interesting to see what paces they hit in the 2020s when they've only got four overs to bowl and they can rush in and do it. And there's generally a huge hike in those situations just purely because their competition load is lessened. And that's why you get those. You get those show back to our like performances against England a few years ago where he was at his toe crushing best.
If you're interested in the article, I have linked to it in the show notes. You can go over to pitchvision.com, have a look at the article called How to Bowl at 161 kilometres an hour. It's food for thought. There is a comment section which has already got a bit lively. So have a look in there and add your thoughts to it, whether you are a coach who wants to get bowlers faster, or you're a player and you want to get that speed up as close to 100 miles an hour as you can. It's a good aim to have, I think. So, Bernard, let's do the yes-no round. This is our section where we only get the chance to answer three questions with yes or no, whether we want to say more or not. So, Bernard, what are the three questions this week?
First question. Tournaments are better for young cricketers than leagues.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. 100 miles per hour bowlers should be more common than they are.
No.
No.
Question three. Unusual styles like Laxman can't be copied.
Yes.
No.
So we're going to delve into the mailbag now and answer the readers' questions for the week. We've got two questions, and the best one of those questions wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got the two questions this week. Fire away.
I do. Our first question is from Wolf.
Great name.
Why is emphasis placed on wickets falling in groups rather than at even intervals? And are there real strategies for bringing this about? Or is it more superstitious or psychology?
Well, I would say that it's not so much that emphasis is placed on wickets falling in groups, in that they do tend to fall in groups because it's easier to get a new batsman out than it is to get a set batsman out. So if you get one wicket, you increase your chances of getting the next batsman out because he needs to get set, he needs to get his eye in. Even in a shorter format version of the game, it's still more likely that you're going to get wickets in groups than you will at even intervals. I did a long time ago on the Pitch Vision Academy website discuss whether you could plot that kind of batting collapse, a flurry of wickets, like a bit like a set piece in football. Can you plot it? Can you decide how you're going to get people out in a clump of wickets like that? And is that a good idea? Well, of course it's a good idea. I think you probably can if you have a good plan and you stick with it. You don't need to change it that much for different types of players, but you can to a certain extent plot a batting collapse a bit like a set piece.
I think a lot of it also is not necessarily plotting, but it's a lot of when that happens, it's momentum, isn't it? That the thinking of that particular unit or that particular phase of the game is going in your favour, and you're more clued up than the guys coming out in terms of your plan. And often it takes a little while to reassess it or to change that balance again after it kind of takes place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what do you think, Gareth?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Batters are most vulnerable, aren't they, in the first 20 balls of an innings, if you're looking at 50 overs or above cricket. There's a direct correlation to incidence of wickets within the first 20 balls than there is at any other stage of somebody's innings. So people are more vulnerable. They've got to adjust to conditions, as you say. They've got to adjust to the ball swing. They've got to get their eye in. All of the sort of traditional things that we constantly talk about as coaches makes people more vulnerable in those first 20 overs and 20 balls rather. And that's where analysis now is probably different to how it is on telly. Whereas on telly, they'll look at dismissal trends over the course of everybody's innings, you know, irrespective of balls faced. But all of the teams that all of the teams around the world will be doing a different sort of analysis. They'll be very keen to look at the first 20 balls of innings and seeing what the dismissal trends are within that, because it might be a different picture in the first 20 balls than it is over the whole of every innings that anybody's played at Test match cricket. You know, so somebody might be more vulnerable to leg before in the first 20 balls than they are at any other stage of their innings, and therefore a good tactic at the beginning of their innings is to go a bit straighter, whereas, you know, when they're on 50, 60, 70, their instance of dismissals might come from balls which are a lot wider because they're looking to score rather than leave. So, I mean, that's a very basic way of looking at it, but first 20 balls, people are vulnerable. Find out what their weaknesses are within those first 20 balls and attack them. And also the psychology is, as Wolf, who, great name, as suggested, it is massive, because we talk about those changing rooms and how the changing room can change the result of what's going out on and out on the pitch. And we've all been there, haven't we, where, you know, everybody's sitting there very comfortably, and then within 5 minutes everybody's running to get their pads on, and the language changes, and you know, you can facilitate that happening from getting those clutches of wickets and being really focused when every new batter comes out to bat, because there's an opportunity to completely disrupt that changing room. Equally and conversely, the role of a coach or captain within that changing room is to keep the patterns exactly the same, keep your language patterns, keep the way you communicate going, keep the way you watch going, to try and limit the amount of wickets falling in any short space of time, and actually to increase the intervals between wickets again. But yeah, you know, you're always, I think the psychology of it is very, very interesting, but players are mostly vulnerable in their first 20 balls.
We had a good example of that in my game on Saturday, actually. We were trying to save the game, and we lost some wickets towards the end. And the language did change from saying, you know, we're going to save this game, to let's not lose this game. And that was interesting, you know, as more wickets fell, it started to become more desperate. The language started to become more desperate. That's kind of reflecting the way that people were thinking a bit more negatively about, we could lose this game, let's not. Whereas the mentality when we were two down and cruising along was more like, well, we're going to save this game quite easily.
And to me, the crucial thing is you stay in the here and now. And what tends to happen is when you're off to a flyer and you're going really well, and there may have been an example of this in the quarterfinal of the under-19s recently, where England lost by a huge margin to South Africa after looking like they were going to win the game. And I'm sure at 114 for two or whatever they were chasing 200, not very many, that all of the chat was very, everybody was probably talking, the focus had gone a little bit, or they were thinking more about the outcome than they were about the processes, and they ended up losing 7 for 30. And, you know, at young levels, that's more likely to happen than at senior levels in many ways, because, you know, people can get a bit carried away. But I think the role of the senior players, the senior coaches, is to make sure that you stay in the here and now, that you don't future project, you don't dwell on what's happened in the past or get overexcited about what's happened in the past, and you keep things on a level. A few weeks ago, I wrote about putting the cups on the window ledge and knocking them off after every time you get 10 runs when you're chasing down a target. And that's a process to try and keep you in the here and now, rather than getting people thinking of the outcome at the end, whether it be a winning or losing one, or how you're going in the game. You know, because I've seen very excited teams get bowled out, like in England did the other day, which was 7 for 30 to end up losing by 100. Whereas the here and now methods are the ones that I've found have been the most successful when batting, chasing targets or setting targets.
Our next question's from Salman, and his question's about captaincy, saying that he has trouble making timely decisions. How can he improve this ability? I would recommend improving soon, else your players will give you the chop.
He's actually under a pseudonym there. He's not put his own name, Salman, because he doesn't want his team to know that he thinks himself as weak as a captain in decision making. His actual name is Fred.
What advice have we got for Fred, Gareth?
Well, I think Salman is, it's really good that he's actually asked this question, whether he's got a pseudonym or not. No, it's a good thing because it shows that he's thinking about his captaincy and how he wants to get better. A simple thing for me is if you think something in the first place, if you have an idea in the first place, then it's probably going to be the right one. And we deliberate and we deliberate and we deliberate. And often we talk ourselves out of things when actually that initial thought was pretty spot on because, you know, we're in the moment, we're in the now, and we just go bang. And so whenever I'm helping people with decision making, whether it be in captaincy or not, if you think of something, if something comes into you, then generally back it, go with it. And I'm sure that Salman's probably talking himself out of making decisions, which makes him take time. And then by the time he's come up with a decision, the horse might have bolted and the game situation's moved on. But you know, as a general rule, I think if you think it, if it's there, then you've obviously done a little bit of background into it and it's the right decision. So just commit behind your initial idea, particularly in a shorter game, because you don't have 5 overs to consider things. And even in test match cricket, you know, we've just watched this last test between South Africa and England, and things can change so quickly. And just have the power of your convictions, back your decision making, back your initial gut feel, and just go for it. And anybody who's struggling to make timely decisions, that's always my advice to them.
Yeah, if you're wrong, then don't be afraid of being wrong, because you'll learn from that and you won't make that mistake again. Well, hopefully you won't anyway. So, you know, it's okay to make a mistake. It's not so okay to keep making the same mistake. But if you make that one mistake. Mike Brearley has a good piece of advice, which is if you think of an attacking option, then do it straight away. And if you're thinking of something more defensive, then maybe just ponder over it a little bit longer. Because if you put an extra slip in and the guy nicks off the next ball, you look like a genius. But if you take the short leg out and then one loops up to where short leg was, then you look like an idiot. So sometimes it's better to be to just hold back on the going more defensive for a second to decide whether it's a good idea or not, because often making a defensive fielding change can be a lot more chasing the ball. You can put a guy out a deep square leg because the bowler bowled a long hop, when you need to ask yourself, is the bowler going to bowl another long hop, or should I move the fielder out there, or should I just take the bowler off perhaps, or use another bowler? Whereas if you're thinking of attacking option and you're still thinking about it when the ball goes there, you think to yourself, oh, I've missed an opportunity there. So I think that's a nice little tip. But yeah, the key is not to have fear of making mistakes.
No, exactly right. I mean, there's nobody's never gone through life about making a bad decision, but I'd rather make a decision and get it wrong and learn from it than not make a decision at all.
Yeah, which happens a lot, especially if you look at field settings, especially, you know, it's very easy to have a set fielding set up for a set part of the game,
yeah,
and just not think about it at all and just let the game drift. And the game situation changes. How often do you see a field set, a wicket falls, and the field doesn't change? So you've got a field set for a batsman who's been blasting it all around, and you've got a new batsman who, you know, he very gratefully takes the single to long on or long off because you've kept them both out because you haven't thought about it. So
I think that's one of the reasons why Vaughan was so popular as a captain, not just with people that were watching the game, but also with the guys in his team, because you knew that he was always going to take that aggressive, that intentful field change or approach to a game of cricket, and he very rarely would hold on to an idea. You know, he'd just go for it, and occasionally he'd get it wrong and then learn from it. And certainly, watch captain taught me a lot about making decisions under pressure. You know, that's one of the reasons why he was such a successful captain. Slightly different now with Andrew Strauss, because, you know, he does think about things for a little bit longer, but I think actually he's got more of a consistent team to be able to to do that. But, you know, I know that people encourage Andrew to make even more decisions than he does, or quicker decisions than he does. The combination of Andrew Strauss's solidity and Michael Vaughan for Walness, I think, would be an unbelievable captain to play under.
Okay, so it's time for a rant from Burners this week. It's our soapbox, and one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant for 1 minute, and 1 minute only, Burners, about whatever subject they like. He's chomping at the bit. He's on the blocks. He's ready to go. Burners, 1 minute starting now.
Being able to judge and gauge where you should be stood as a fielder. Now, we've all played cricket. We all know the fielding positions. We all know pretty much what our job is in that fielding position, whether it's saving one, whether it's saving two, if we're in the ring, we're out of the ring. But the number of times you have to emphasise to players that are in the ring that they've got to save one, if you've got someone a little bit deeper in the ring that their job is to save two, it becomes really, really pedantic. You know, if you're saving one, the idea is to cut off one run and run someone out. If you're playing on a huge field and you're sent out to the boundary, you're probably not going to stand on the boundary tape. You're going to stand 10 yards in, making it practical to actually take a catch. I sometimes question my colleagues and my teammates' actual grasp and feel to actually win the game at times. They're quite happy to stand there and just watch it all just drift away in front of them. And it's, I tell you what, I want to take my spiked footwear off and gouge my eyes out with it after about 30 overs. It's absolutely horrific what goes on sometimes.
Wow, that's an explosion.
It's a proper soapbox, that, mate.
Audio.
I had to tell one of our Colts, he's 16. He plays for Middlesex. He was on the 45, saving one. I wasn't even bowling. Off-spin bowler. Guy keeps on, you know, it's an off-spinner. So to a right-hander, it's a critical position. And this guy's supposed to be young and quick, and he can throw it in really, you know, above the stumps. And every single time it happened, he went back to his mark. I said, at what stage in your mind have you not thought about walking in another 5 yards or just starting your walk-up? You know, you walk in 5 yards closer. Oh, well, you know, what if he hits it harder and it goes past me? Well, that's not what you're there for, is it? Then that's, you know, he's done well there. That's down to him.
You might need to edit that bit there, Dave.
Yeah, I'll bleep it out, don't worry. Yeah. Okay, well, let's wrap it up quickly. Okay, I feel exhausted after Bernice's rant, but we have to finish off the show with our normal procedures. And of course, the first one of those is our competition winner. So, Gareth, we had Wolf's question about taking wickets in groups, and Salman/Fred's question about decision making while captaining in a timely fashion. Which one did you prefer?
I'm going to go with a decision-making one from Salman this week, because we've not really covered that so far on the show, certainly in the time when I've been on there. So as a new question that's come up, Salman wins it this week.
Congratulations, Salman. You win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So you can take your pick from that and get watching the videos, listening to audio, and doing the interactive stuff that's on there. Of course, we accept questions every week, and we're getting many, many questions every week. So if you've sent one in, we do try and answer them all. We don't always get time, so do feel free to send it in again if you haven't heard anything back from us. So, Berners, how would somebody send in a question, a new question, or resend an old one in?
They can pick up the telephone. Our number is 020-88-167-691. Or they can drop us an email, and the address is coach@pitvision.com.
You can get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can find us on Facebook. You can put your question on there if you like. It's facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can subscribe to us in iTunes if you want to listen to the show every week. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you've got all the details of the RSS feed if you want to use that. We've got a tail ender this week. It's an extension of one of Wolf's questions, but I thought it was interesting enough to just throw in at the end, which is his question about an accepted or recognised collective noun for a fall of wickets. He's got clutch, cluster, clump, clatter. That's it. So do we have any more? What do you say when wickets are falling? What's the collective noun for a fall of wicket?
Well, I think cluster is probably the most widely used one in my environments, but batch of wickets.
Yeah.
We call it bang bang at school actually. So when we're in the field and you'll hear the lads going bang bang, and then if we get another wicket, so if we got two wickets, it's bang bang bang, and so on and so forth. So that's their way of talking about a bang bang of wickets. But I'd say batch or clutch. Or cluster of ones that I've heard the most of.
Yeah, bang bang, I've heard quite a lot. One of our players says boom boom. He gets that wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. It's more hitting, isn't it?
Yeah. He says, come on, lads, boom boom. And everyone looks at him a bit funny. Berners, what do you say when a wicket falls and you want another one to fall quickly?
I say, let's roll the buggers and get in the bar.
Yeah, a roll of wickets is not quite right, is it? But I don't know. Maybe we should come up with our own one. A shame of wickets, something like that.
You normally call the number, don't you? So if they're three down, you say, come on, 4-5. I normally say 4, 5, 6, 7 and 8 here, please.
All right, so that's it for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, coach.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Wolf.
Brilliant.